Realtor.com is making a stand for buyer representation, and you can too. Join Realtor.com in sharing the list of 111 things buyer's agents do. Visit Realtor.com/buyer agent toolkit to help spread the word. Buyer agents are essential.
When we bought the Christie's Network, we took a look at how it stood and what it represented. And we said, okay, we want to make sure we respect the traditions and the history of that network. But we also want to make sure we can evolve it to make sure it stays relevant as consumers change. We need to make sure you're always staying relevant to the majority of your consumers. So it's really a balance. And we try to work together. And it's not just the two of us. We have an incredible team here in the United States and abroad. We always make the best decisions for the company as a whole over the long term. And that's best decisions for our agents, for our brokers, for our affiliates, and in the end, for our consumers.
The risk has changed, right? Even though we grew fast and people pointed to us, we never took on any risk. We were never not profitable. But I would say now risk centers around discretion. And I think that we have better discretion when it comes to franchise partners, franchise sales, affiliate growth, than a lot of franchise sales guys, let's say, or teams that never built a brokerage.
We all know about the challenges with the NAR settlement, the commission lawsuits, the market. But what are you doing to capture opportunities in this market? Today, I had Thad Wong and Mike Golden, co-CEOs of Christie's International Real Estate and founders of At Properties. And we talked, first of all, about their, they did a luxury real estate report that had some really interesting insights about what's going on in the luxury real estate market. But we transitioned into finding those opportunities in the market today. And we talked a little bit about their relationship too, and how after 27 years as partners, they are able to still get along. So enjoy the podcast, and there's some really good nuggets in it. So, Mike, Thad, thank you for joining the Real Trending podcast.
Hey, thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. So I know you recently, Christie's International Real Estate recently put out a luxury real estate report. And I want to start by talking a little bit, digging a little bit deeper into those findings. And one of the ones I saw was that U.S. brokers are more optimistic about home prices, being stable or rising, really continuing to increase compared to European countries. So, Mike, would you tell me a little bit about what factors are contributing to the optimism in the U.S. compared to Europe?
So there's a variety of factors that factor into, I think, that feeling. One of the biggest ones is that we're still woefully under-inventoried throughout the country. Mm-hmm. So we're an underbuilt market in general. So the fact that there's just not enough real estate to buy, and even though interest rates, when they do come down, we'll start to see more inventory, we're still going to be light inventory-wise. One of the other reasons why, I think, too, is that, remember, we went into this a lot earlier than Europe did. Our inflation started, went up a lot faster, a lot higher earlier on. Now, I think Europe is dealing with a higher level of inflation than we are, definitely higher level of increases. So it's almost like we went in earlier, we're starting to come out a little bit earlier, and there's just generally more optimism in the United States for our markets versus what you're seeing in Europe.
Okay. Thad, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I would just state that the strength of the economy. I mean, you're seeing just from yesterday's numbers, inflation at still over 3.5% with the incredible spike in interest rates. It really shows that the economy is working from the inside out, and it is affecting everyone. And post-COVID, the wealthy got super, super wealthy. So you saw a lot of this being driven by ultra-luxury real estate. The rich got super, super rich. Now, if there is a potential, now you're starting to see rumblings of a tax credit for first-time buyers. That would be amazing. Like if that happened right now, when we talk about waiting for rates to fuel sellers to get on, to increase inventory, to spur growth in the market and more transactions, if you're not going to get that, the only way to then get that is to credit first-time buyers. Now you'll have sellers get into the market if there is a tax credit, because more first-time buyers are going to get in there. And voila, you're going to continue to have greater appreciation. So it's not going to solve affordable home crisis that we've got. But at the same time, it is going to spur the market. You are going to get more first-time buyers in homes. And it will keep the housing market moving forward with, I think, very little threat of deflation when it comes to housing prices.
Well, if you read the headlines, the first-time buyers are going to be better off just because of the NAR settlement. So
yes. Yeah, that's such a strange thing. I heard that. I listened to the Daily and I read a couple other things where I don't fault the reporters because they're just trying to report. But when you don't understand and grasp all the nuance associated with a market, it would be something that many would assume.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm going to transition from that into university towns. That's what about that transition? That's a good one, right? So university towns, according to the report, Madison and Ann Arbor are kind of hotspots for luxury real estate. So what do you believe is kind of driving this trend? And Thad, we'll start with you.
Sure. So, you know, I think that when you have the educated population, especially over the last 20 years, and I'd say an increase in social media, you have a focus on fitness, right? Mm-hmm. As you grow old, there's now a greater tendency to be young. I think in the old days, as you got old, you wanted to surround yourself with old people and go old. And what I said in Florida, do the walk of death, where you wake up and you do the same walk every day until you die. And I think that now people want to be around educated populations that revolve around health. And anytime you're connected to a university, you have culture, whether that's dance, whether it's theater, whether it's music, whether it's arts. So you have people that want to live a wider variety and a bigger life. So they want to be surrounded by a vibrant culture that's economically sound around other educated people, centered around culture and amenities that are a lot of times in college towns that are similar to big cities, even though they're in much smaller towns, smaller municipalities.
Yeah, what's interesting to me about that is I feel like university towns generally have a good amount of really lower income housing or cheaper housing. So it's interesting that they're kind of becoming hotspots for luxury real estate. To me, that seems like a shift, is it not? Or can you explain that a little bit?
Well, it's interesting because what you're getting is in a lot of these college towns and in generally a lot of the smaller cities in the United States is you're getting a lot of the big city amenities. You're getting, you know, restaurants, great dining, great shopping, because you're seeing a lot of people, a lot of the high-end shopping going to these destinations. But you don't have the hassles of big cities. You don't have the traffic as much. And they're just becoming more popular, the kind of quality of life. I mean, it used to be, I think, you know, back in like the 80s, New York City was New York City. Everyone wanted the hustle and bustle and the kind of craziness, the 24 hours of New York. And listen, New York is still a fabulous city and it'll always be New York. And I think sort of the hub of city in the United States. But I think that people's quality of life and the way that they want to live is a little bit different. And it's a different kind of lifestyle. So, you know, as Thad said, you're getting great education. You're around a lot of younger people. It's a very vibrant community. But it's, again, less hassles and just a little bit better quality of life. So people are gravitating and they're willing to pay more. And, you know, the luxury level price point is lower. So it becomes more affordable, where you may have to pay multi-millions of dollars to get, you know, a great place in New York or in Miami, some of the other major cities. You may be able to get an awesome house for $500,000, $750,000. It's still considered luxury.
Yeah. And the housing stock, which I think you were alluding to, is that, you know, in these towns, you had a lot of the professors that drove, call it family style housing, right? Mm-hmm. 3,500 square foot single family homes. And you had a lot of small homes that were student housing. Well, what you've seen in major universities, popular universities, is a lot of student housing. You saw the big boom over the last 20 years, huge student housing projects, because more affluent students can live in larger scale, call it dormitory apartments with lots of amenities. Mm-hmm. Well, that opened up a lot of these smaller houses that are less expensive that have been remodeled to support empty nesters. And also because it was really a professor's salary that was supporting these 3,500 square foot houses, you're seeing other people come into some of these major markets and get a great home for $600,000 to $800,000. And if you look at the pricing, you mentioned Ann Arbor earlier, that's been a top five place to raise children in America for the last 10 years. Yeah. You have an incredible housing stock there. It's affordable, but really affordable for more affluent people, affordable from an affluent perspective.
Yeah.
And I think a point that you made that is really interesting is the quality of the housing stock for students has elevated the quality of the housing stock in general. Mm-hmm. I know you have, that has three college age students. My oldest is going to college and I'm looking at the housing that they live in, and it is dramatically different than the housing that I lived in when I was in college. And I think that's just sort of elevated the stock and the quality of housing across the board in these college towns.
Yeah, I would agree. I have one out of college and one heading to college. And we visited Oklahoma. Oh my gosh, the dorms there are incredible. She's going to Ole Miss, which also has some really nice brand new housing. But yeah, it's amazing what they are living in now. So,
well, and they're also developing basically A-class apartment buildings that these students are living in. I have a friend who's in that business. And it's unbelievable the buildings that they're building in a lot of these college towns. They're as nice as any of the apartment buildings that you see in Chicago or New York or anywhere of these other major cities.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So let's talk a little bit about Gen Z. They're entering the luxury real estate market and they're kind of prioritizing different things than maybe other generations of buyers have been, like eco-friendly features, low maintenance living. So how is Christie's kind of adapting its offerings or the, how they're marketing or listing properties to meet these new consumer preferences?
Well, I think in a couple of different ways. I mean, obviously from the marketing perspective, you have to adapt to each generation as to how they want to be marketed to. And we've seen that because when Thad and I started in the business, we were sort of coming out of the baby boomer grouping into more of the Gen X, Gen Y. And the way that they wanted to be interacted with, the way that they wanted to be serviced was different. And you're seeing the same thing with the newest generation, the Gen Z buyers, way more social media. Everything gets done on your phone and everything's electronic, where before it was much different. Everything was done in paper. Everything was done more slowly. It's much faster. So you have to adapt your marketing to make sure that you're getting the message and you're reaching them the right way via the venues that they want to be reached through. So that's part of it. And then I also think part of it, you're definitely seeing people who are more conscious of environmental change and wanting to make sure that they have, no to low carbon emissions. And, as we talk with new developers, those are part of the offerings. Those are part of the pieces that they're stressing. They're spending more money, whether it be a single family house or a condominium building, they're spending more money and putting more into the eco-friendly pieces of it. And that's kind of across the world. That's not just in parts of the United States, but we have developers in Dubai who are doing eco-friendly developments, which is just as important as ones we have in the States here.
Yeah. Thad, do you have anything to add to that?
Not much. I think that, you can see the focus is on Gen Z everywhere in every market. Mm-hmm. The auction house is heavily focused on it. I don't know if you saw the new Bitcoin Oracle auction they're doing online for some of that art. They sold the two most expensive Beeples. So they leaned heavily into the NFT market. Of course, Jordans, things that are much, in the old days we liked Monet. Now you like to have a rare pair of Jordan 1s. They're leaning into what Gen Z buyers are interested in. And so is real estate.
"2024 is the year to act, to make bold moves, tell better stories, and build brands that endure. At the 1000-Watt Brand and Marketing Summit, we're putting real estate experts like you in a room with some of the greatest marketing minds around so you can turn your big ideas into action. Join us in Dallas, June 25th through the 27th, for a real estate event designed for doers. Get your tickets at 1000watt.net/summit. That's 1000watt.net/summit. Well, let's talk emerging markets. I noticed that Malta, Nicaragua were top prospects for luxury real estate investment. So what makes those markets kind of attractive and what risks might investors face in those markets?
I can talk about what makes them attractive if you've ever been to Malta. But a big piece of it is their foreign ownership visa program, how easy it is to buy and how easy it is to get a European passport if you go there. So for people that are, in their golden years and they want to and they can afford the opportunity to live wherever and however they'd like. This offers an amazing opportunity for them to get a European passport, spend years in Europe traveling around, make an investment in one of the most beautiful spots in the world, and have a great investment as well in blue chip real estate. So it's for low taxes, it's ease of transportation, and it's a great safety profile when it comes to investment, not just in your life, but into real estate.
Yeah, and Malta, I think, is going to become even more popular. I read this week that Spain is canceling their kind of golden visa program. They're no longer going to offer it. So I think Malta will be the only European country now that I'm aware of anyway that you can get that in. And there are special purpose areas set up specifically for this where foreign non-European Union investors can buy. But there's I also think what you're seeing too, because of the price of luxury real estate throughout the world. So it's not just obviously the major cities in the United States, but go anywhere. It's gotten incredibly expensive. People who want these second homes, want to make real estate investments, are looking for places that they can actually afford to invest in. And you're seeing it in Nicaragua, in the UAE, in Panama, and in other parts of the world. And then obviously places in the United States as well, where it's just a little bit more affordable. So people can jump in and make those investments now where they can't afford. I mean, you look at the price of homes in like Aspen. I mean, I don't think you can buy a knockdown in Aspen for $5 million anymore. So it's a different world where you've got the super wealthy, and Stan had noted before, have had accumulated an incredible amount of wealth, but you have a lot of Gen X, Gen Y, and Gen Z now that are accumulating wealth that they want to spend, but they aren't at that level. There are risks in some of these countries. You know, some of the governments aren't fully stable. And so you have to realize that things can change. I mean, that's why the United States has always been such a haven for those investments. But you're seeing way more stability because the world has become so much more global. And as you get more wealth and more investment in these areas, there's more of, I think, a stress to create stability.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, let's kind of switch to what Christie's International Real Estate is doing right now. So kind of what are some of your long-term strategies to kind of adapt to the evolving luxury market?
Well, I think from the real estate perspective, technology is at the forefront. So by offering our affiliates in North America the full platform service, soup to nuts, that gets a lot of independent brokerages around the country, something that they don't have. Right now, they're still using a lot of different services to provide pre-contract to both post-close technology resources. So being able to plug in technology into all of our affiliates here, that's a huge plus for them. So that's I'd say that's probably the most important piece that we're adding to it. Obviously, brand and luxury, you know, now more than ever, especially after the lawsuit. If anything is going to happen from the lawsuit, it's going to be a greater emphasis on the education of both buyer and seller. And we all know that people are willing to pay more for brand. And so having a brand that's universally known and associated with luxury, and also one of only two brands that you can really say worldwide that immediately spur the thought of luxury, Christie's alongside Sotheby's, because they have century-old auction houses have been selling luxury goods since the 1700s. So, you know, those two pieces of it are really big. And then the important side is that we filled a lot of gaps since acquiring the network. Miami, Los Angeles, San Francisco Bay Area, Southwest Florida, Dallas, Austin, London, Munich, Milan, Japan. Now there's a heavy focus that we're putting on Asia. So there's luxury in all parts of the world. Us being able to offer the brand and technology, that's going to help the best independent practitioners in each region, you know, become more competitive and successful.
And that's been a big strategy of ours as well, is really focusing on the independents. You know, when we bought the Christie's network, it was largely an independent network, but there were some franchise brands in the network. And we felt like we needed to be a network for the independents. And the top independents in each market typically are the big luxury players. A lot of the franchise brands, not to take anything away from them, they're great companies, but most of them don't necessarily focus on the luxury. They focus on the mid-tier of the business, where a lot of times you find that the biggest luxury players are the independents in these different markets. So we've made that a big focus, and we want to try to give these independents more tools, more value, and more things to help them rise above their competition. So that's been a big strategy I think a big focus of our strategy since we took over the network almost 2.5 years ago.
Okay. Now, have you seen any shifts in kind of the demographics of your clients and changing needs, and how are you adapting to that?
Education, I would say, you know, through our network. I think that unless you're a real estate agent or you've worked with a high quality real estate agent, you don't know the breadth of services that an agent provides their consumer. It's not just plumbers and electricians, but in a lot of cases, they are financial advisors. You know, if you think of Aaron Kerman in Los Angeles, he's a financial advisor to many billionaires in their investment of real estate. So from our end, putting together education that can drive our best agents, especially our master circle, best in class agents within the Christie's International Real Estate Network, to become more educated economically and in their markets so that they can really give strong service and advice to their customers as it relates to real estate. Because a lot of these people are, like I said, they're the best wealth advisors in the world with things that involve real estate, how to maintain that real estate, where to invest for both their financial, but also their lifestyle objectives.
Mike, anything?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we take a look at our clientele and we think about the fact that real estate has become now a really important investment vehicle for people. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if you look 40 years ago, people needed to buy a home, they wanted to buy their home. And then people that could afford it would buy a second home. But there wasn't a focus on creating value. It was more of that's what I want to live in. That's what I want to use for a vacation home. So that's where I'm going to put some money. Now people think of it much more as an investment as mm-hmm. well as part of their lifestyle. So to Thad's point, I think Aaron is probably the greatest example of a true wealth advisor, but a lot of our agents, a lot of our luxury agents throughout the country, throughout the world are sort of different, smaller versions of kind of what Aaron does, still working with their clients, helping them understand the values and helping them understand where they should invest. And that's where I think the value of the Christie's International Real Estate Network really lies, is that we have an incredible group of boots on the ground in luxury markets throughout the world. So we have a client that lives in Chicago or lives in New York, but wants to diversify their investments and wants to be in London or wants to be in Paris or wants to be in the south of France. We have people that we can go to help them really understand the values, and they can then work hand in hand and continue to maintain that relationship while they can provide them with the resources of other real estate brokers in those specific markets. So, and you know, you're seeing a lot of younger buyers, and mm-hmm. you're seeing people who are looking to invest in real estate. I think there was almost a pause in that Gen Z group where they didn't leave their parents' basements very quickly, or they decided they didn't want to buy real estate. They decided to rent. And now they're starting to see the value, especially post-COVID, mm-hmm. when people were stuck in their homes, to understand the value of real estate. And then they're also seeing the value of it as an investment. So, we're definitely seeing an evolution. And, you know, as always, we will continue to evolve with our clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the two of you have been partners in business for a very, very long time. I know you somewhat divide and conquer your responsibilities, but I want to talk a little bit more like about how you decide what risks to take and what, when to innovate, how to innovate. How do you agree on everything? And if you don't, how do you handle that?
That's a good question.
It's a great question. And I would say if we said we agreed on everything, we'd be crazy and lying. But I think we have been partners for, God, what is it, almost 27 years. We bring a good balance with each other. We bring a great balance to the table and we also have a tremendous amount of respect for each other's opinions. So mm-hmm. we listen to each other, and then we try to kind of come out the other side with the best, maybe combined view of where we should go. It's not like a rote process where we sit down and make decisions and here's how we're going to go. You know, we're very nimble as a company, and we're constantly evolving and reacting to what's happening in the marketplace and also trying to be proactive. So, you know, when we bought the Christie's Network, we took a look at how it stood and what it represented. And we said, okay, we want to make sure we respect the traditions and the history of that network, but we also want to make sure we can evolve it to make sure it stays relevant as consumers change, as Gen Z buyers become the major buyer and seller pool, as opposed to mm-hmm. the baby boomers. We need to make sure you're always staying relevant to the majority of your consumers. You still need to service the baby boomer generation, still need to service Gen X, Gen Y. So it's really a balance, and we try to work together. And it's not just the two of us. We have an incredible team here in the United States and abroad that we really listen to their opinions. We talk through the decisions that we need to try to make. And we try to make, I think, that we always make the best decisions for the company as a whole over the long term. And that's best decisions for our agents, for our brokers, for our affiliates, and in the end, for our consumers.
Yeah, I agree with everything Mike said. The only thing I'd add is I would say the risk has changed, right? Mm-hmm. In the old days, risk was for the brokerage only, then had to do with expansion. And contrary, even though we grew fast and people pointed to us, we never took on any risk. We were never not profitable. We were profitable in 08, 09, 10. We might not have taken as lavish of a holiday vacation, but the company was solvent, profitable, and always investing, opening new offices, and we always were growing our engineering team one by one. But I would say now risk centers around discretion. And I think that we have better discretion when it comes to franchise partners, franchise sales, affiliate growth, than a lot of franchise sales guys, let's say, or teams that never built a brokerage. So when we meet with someone and we look at their strategy and their plan, we can at least give our opinion on whether it's a good plan and whether they're a good leader. And when we bought the network, right, we've got everybody in there. Some we would have bought, some we would have partnered with, some we wouldn't have. Our job now is to expand the network, replace where needed, and use discretion. So I would say risk comes into right now choosing the affiliates. Fortunately, when we go into a market, we don't have to go into any market, but most of the markets we go in, we have some choices, right? We're selling a product that everybody wants at the end of the day. Everybody would love to have the Christie's logo next to their brand. Nobody would not want that. Now, whether they can afford it is one point, but for us, it's whether they can build it and grow it. John R. Wood's a prime example. We selected them in Naples. We had three choices. They were the number one brokerage, but only by a couple hundred million. After the first year, they added 850 million agents and beat their closest competitor by $1.4 billion in 2023. And the closest competitor was Sotheby's. So for them, they had number one market share, but they didn't have number one average sales price. They brought us in, they leaned in luxury, they recruited a ton of agents, and now they're dominant by number one. I don't know if anyone will catch up to them for a long, long time. The addition of Christie's also in Naples, Naples, Florida, such a high affluent market, very, very big deal.
Yeah, it's a great market to be in for sure. And I'm in Florida, so I have authority on that one. No, yeah. Not in Naples, though, unfortunately. So you didn't hire a mediator to like follow you guys around or anything, and
we didn't even do. I don't think we ever even did rock, scissors, paper. I think we always came to a conclusion. And I'll tell you, like, I have no problem. You know, Mike used the word respect. Mm-hmm. You know, respect is a really big deal in partnership and in humanity. And I think that, you know, this is why most partners blow up, right? The ego, finance, romance, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I never was romantically attracted to Michael. he was to me, but, you know, of course. But, you know, we respect each other's opinion. He said that. I can't reiterate something more valuable than that. When Mike talks to me, I know he's being honest, and I know he's giving a quality opinion based on what he's researched. And we've always discussed. He's convinced me. I've convinced him. But we both listened very, very closely with a respectful ear.
Yeah.
And I just, if anyone's listening and considering a partnership with someone, you know, sometimes the best partner is not the person that's exactly like you, who tells you what you want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. So
that's
my
the
last
best spouse.
Yeah. That's a good one.
How's that working for you?
I love that thinking.
So obviously we're in a really, you know, I mean, we're in kind of one of those cycles in real estate. I know you both have been through them. I've been through them as well, where things are really changing, whether it's, you know, now with new buyer representation agreements being, you know, mandatory. You know, we've never really been in this type of market with the inventory the way it is, so low. So how are you staying ahead of industry trends and kind of adapting to all of those trends to propel the company forward?
I mean, I think it's something we've always done. The one thing that we've always focused on is being nimble and being willing to adapt. We've been in business for 24 years now, and we have seen a number of ups and downs, but we've always adapted quickly, and we don't sit back and wait. And we realize that no one's bigger than the market. So you have to adapt to the market as it sits, but you can also think outside of the box and you can be different. You don't have to be the same and follow the trends as everyone else. In fact, I think we've prided ourselves on not following the trends and being willing to take maybe what people would say were risky decisions. I think a philosophy that Thad and I both have imbued in the company for the years, particularly Thad pounded this one in, is that if it's not broken, break it, find a way to do it better, and let's improve it. So we never sit back on our laurels and say, God, we've figured it out because we've gotten bigger or we've gotten more market share. We're always thinking that we've got to get better. We've got to get better to service our agents better. We have to get better to service our affiliates better. We have to get better to service the end consumer better. So we're constantly thinking about how we can improve and trying to take feedback from our agents who are boots on the ground. They're the ones that are in the business every day, knowing what's going on. Where, you know, Thad and I sold for years, but it's been, 20 years since we've really been out there selling real estate actively. We have to listen to the people we work with to understand what's happening in the business. But I think it's all about adapting, being willing to take some risks, and be looking at, you know, where the future's going. So you kind of want to know where the puck's going as opposed to, you know, where it's been.
Mm-hmm. That's a Gretzky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The only thing
I'll add is that there are a lot of people focused on NAR, and you said the word react. I think it's a mistake personally. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, when you have seismic shifts like this in a market, you have to focus on the client. And the service that's being provided to the client. And I want to remind everybody that there's been a lot of choices that the clients had that have been funded by billions of dollars. And I'll just talk to Redfin. Redfin spent billions of dollars going across the country, founded in Seattle before Zillow, offering brokerage services, let's say half off. And they never got any traction, even with billions of dollars. And I would argue that they have the best user experience online. So the best technology that's consumer facing. Some of the most important clients are using their portal, but they were never able to get significant traction to become anywhere remotely close to profitable as a brokerage. And they offered their services at 1%. So it's always been out there. So I don't think leaning into being cheaper is actually what the best agents need to do, because over the last decade with Redfin in the market, the consumer says, hey, I'm willing to pay for great service. I'm willing to pay for an educated leadership, and I'm looking for the best agent in my market, and I'm more than willing to pay for it. So focusing on the client right now, I think educating all of the agents to help them be able to talk to their clients, to help buyers understand the value and importance of agency, all those things go into the benefits that come out of it for the consumer. Lots of communication with agents and lots of roundtable discussions and agent training for us are going to make our agents far more prepared. Because I do think at the end of this, what's really going to happen is the consumer, whether they're selling or buying, they're going to ask a heck of a lot more questions with whomever it is they're looking for representation. And they are more than willing to pay for the more educated, capable broker.
Yeah. And those agents.
That's been proven for a long time.
They have to be ready to answer those questions.
Do it for nothing. But, you know, you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
Yeah. That's a good one. I don't know who said that one. Is that, can we attribute
grandpa,
that
to my grandpa told me that one.
Oh, well,
the other thing to remember too, is that we've been through, you know, seismic shifts in our industry, whether it be market shifts or changes in the industry over the years. We view them all as opportunities. A lot of people are scared of change. Change is great because change is what creates opportunity. The reality, if the internet hadn't come into play and the world hadn't changed, become more technology focused, I don't know that we would have been able to establish ourselves as a major player. Because in the past, the value proposition was size and sort of being part of the establishment. And that early to mid 2000s created an opportunity for companies like ours to create a foundation and kind of put a flag in the ground that you really wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So for us, while, you know, change can be scary, even for us, it's still the most exciting thing that we experience in our business and the thing that provides the most opportunity for us and for our agents and for our affiliates.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Thad and Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. Great insight into everything from your luxury report to your relationship. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you for listening to Real Trending. If you haven't already, we'd love it if you'd take a minute to rate the show or leave a comment. And we will see you next week with more news and insights.